Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of a phone call and will join us momentarily. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. For the next hour, Melody and I will be bringing you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news and events of the day. Thursday, August 24, 2023. Happy National Sports Sampling Day. How about that? This newly founded day encourages kids and families to try a new sport or play one they haven't in a long time. In fact, the organizers want to promote opportunities for every child to grow physically and emotionally through the power of sports. There's power in play, they say, organized or otherwise. National Sports Sampling Day gives power to children who love to play sports by sampling more than one. Sampling more than one sport provides an opportunity for kids to grow physically and emotionally. Organizers point to these five benefits. They teach problem solving. They help maintain healthy habits for both mind and body. They build self-esteem and boost self-image, they encourage new friendships, and they promote learning to work with other people, just like Melody and me, and Melody and Butch, and me and Butch, and all of us with Todd, our production engineer. Well, study after study shows that children who play sports tend to be more focused on school because being successful in schools allows them to play in sports. So on this special day, make sure your child is out there trying something new. Melody, are you back with us?
I am.
Just in time for the market report.
Yes, I wouldn't want to miss that. And so let's go ahead and get to gold and silver today. And that's a nice thing to be recognized, and it is important. You know, and I just saw something. Tiger Woods, I guess his son is learning how to golf. And he said, you don't want to, he says he never tells his son to go out and play golf. He said his son asks him to play golf, and his son wants to play more golf and other sports because of the way, you know, so don't force them to do something, I guess was what he was trying to do. And they'll actually end up doing more. Yeah, they'll end up doing more. So we'll see if he has another you know, if he'll have the same relationship with his son in golf as he did with his father. But anyway, let's go ahead and get to the market report. And we have gold. It struggled today, but we're still up a buck. We have a stronger dollar, so that's probably the main reason. But we did have a high of 1924, and in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're at 1917. Silver's down 20 cents at 2420. Platinum was up $5 at 946, and palladium was down 42, 1268. The USDX was up big today, 0.64 at 104. Crude oil was down, or basically unchanged, at 78.80. Now, there's been some pressure on the paper markets, though, today. Had a sell-off. You know, it was funny, in the market, the markets were going up because of NVIDIA, and now all of a sudden that rally fizzles, and the Dow dropped 373 points, a little over 1%. The S&P was down 59 points at 1.35%. The NASDAQ was down almost 2%, 257. So we'll have to see if that carries through tomorrow, as the Asian markets were all positive. European markets were mixed. The FTSE was the only one that was higher. All the other ones were negative, but, you know, less than a half a percent or thereabouts. 10-year yield is moving a little higher today, 0.4237. And we're going to talk about it here. You know, again, it's okay, it's the Jackson Hole meeting. You know, again, happens every year, and but it does make markets move, so that's why we're going to bring it into our conversation. It's important. And natural gas was up a little over a half a percent at 2.51. So there you have it for the markets, and let's go ahead and see where we're going to go, Dave. I guess we're going to go to Jackson Hole.
We're going to Wyoming.
We're going
to
Wyoming.
Tetons.
Oh, I love the Grand Tetons. They are just so absolutely beautiful. It is just breathtaking. And so they're having the Federal Reserve's annual conference in Jackson Hole. It opened today. It's going to go through Saturday. And, of course, you know, we have such dedicated Fed policymakers that they're going to try to guide the economy towards something akin to what's happening in their host city. Again, we know they've jacked up the benchmark interest rates, 22-year high. They're trying to fight inflation by trying to slow down growth. Well, they're never going to fight inflation, because that's not the issue with inflation. So I'm sure it has impacts on what they're trying to do. But ultimately, you've got inflation is here to stay. Consumer inflation picked up last year. We know that. It's still hot. It's still 50% above their goal. And although you hear one breath will say, even as they cool the economy, the other breath says, we have the best economy we ever had. So depends on where you're at. The Fed hopes to avoid tipping it into a recession. And but now we just have regional recessions, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Not overall recessions. No. We have specific
sector recessions.
Jackson Hole signs the economy is stabilizing, has begun to emerge. Supply chains have normalized for some retailers. That we're going to have to question, because, again, we're looking at what's happening down there in the Panama Canal, the big backlog due to drought. And there's some other issues that are going on that could also disrupt supply chains. So I don't think it has really normalized, but that's what they tell us. Hotel occupancy rates, they've come off the boil of the pandemic years. Room rates have eased a little bit. Real estate agents are advertising some reduced home prices. We talked about that yesterday, how high, and the day before, about how high the prices are and the difficulties in that area. So it's, what else have you say, Dave?
Well, about. You know, it's funny. It's not really funny, but it's interesting that Jackson Hole's in Grand Teton County, which they say is the richest and most unequal county wealth-wise in the entire country. It also includes a branch of First Republic Bank, which caters mostly to its wealthy clients, which we also know was one of the three banks that collapsed in the spring. So I found that to be
an interesting
aside. Now, the Fed's conference is occurring against this backdrop of growing optimism for the U.S. economy. China, on the other hand, not so much. But despite higher borrowing costs caused by the Fed rate hikes, 11 of them since March last year, consumers continue to spend. And it's not just cash. It's card. So we're having, both governmental, corporate, and personal debt heading up to all-time highs, $1 trillion for the first time in credit card debt. Ralph Bostic, who's president of the Atlanta Fed, says despite everything, he's still optimistic that the Fed can, in his words, thread the needle and achieve that soft landing. Said a recession has never been on my outlook. Sure, it's been on his mind a lot. At the same time, he's heard from some business leaders who are concerned about the jump in borrowing costs, as they should. He observed things are slowing down, though, in an orderly fashion. People are being more sensitive in how they're spending their money. Well, I'm not so sure about that, particularly with the rise in credit card debt. So we'll see what happens at least in terms of the Fed. Jay Powell, Fed chair, opens up officially with his keynote address tomorrow morning. I'm sure we'll be talking about it on this program. You know what they say, Melody, as Jackson Hole goes, so goes the nation.
Wow. Can you imagine their arrogance and thinking how they have the abilities to supposedly manipulate the United States economy?
It's pretty powerful. A powerful thought, if not a powerful tool.
You know,
I was just going to say.
They wouldn't be able to do it if it wouldn't be for all of these multinational corporations, along with the Black Rocks and Carlyle groups, to do what is necessary to make their decisions somewhat work and to keep things from falling apart. But then again, I think a lot of it is the media. They keep a lot of the panic out because they don't talk about the reality of things. So
I wish we could find a truly disinterested, objective third party group that could do an honest evaluation of just how impactful the Fed has been since objectively and quantitatively, how the Fed has been since its inception earlier last century. I think we'd be in for an astounding eye-opener, knowing what relatively little I know.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is, since the creation of the Federal Reserve, I mean, look at what they've done to our monetary policies. Look how they have changed over the years and taking us off our gold standard. And, you know, people say, well, if we would have remained on the gold standard, we wouldn't be the powerhouse that we are. Well, are we really a powerhouse with the debt that we have created, with the debt that we need? We need everybody else to buy the debt just so we can function. Just so that we can pay the you know, what we owe to service the debt.
Clearly is a house of cards.
And it's you know, and are those will no one will ever be held accountable. And the thing it is, you know, we pay our taxes. I remember Clinton, yeah, you're going to be paying 80% of your money to taxes. Well, you know what? He was right. So it's just like, you know, they've basically destroyed the workings of this nation to where we'd be able to maintain the powerhouse that we once were, or were we ever that powerhouse?
Yeah, or it's been just an illusion. The thing that I think is critical for listeners to remember is that the Fed essentially creates inflation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the end of the gold standard in 1971, and going to a fiat currency wholly, it just changed the whole nature of our economy and equality/inequality in our nation, the latter of which has grown exponentially as time has gone on. Although we did mention a couple of weeks ago, I don't want to get into that. That's an aside, but there was a recent report that showed internationally that income inequality in the aggregate was getting better in wealthier countries compared to not so wealthy. But I'd like to see more numbers about that because I'm surely skeptical about its veracity.
Yeah, so it's when they go into Wyoming, you know, the Jackson Hole, and you know they do. It's really kind of disgusting that, you know, I can only imagine. And you know, the January meeting in Davos is no different, except those are the multinational corporations and governments working together. And it used to be secret with the Bilderbergers. You know, that used to be the same. Well, that's not secret anymore. Everybody knows what's going on there. You know, so they've lost a lot of their power. So I don't know. We plug on, we do what we have to do. We preserve what we do. We work, we have families, we have lives. But we sort of lost our country to some degree. But anyway, back to durable good orders. They come in below expectations, but all is well. But they're saying it's all because of Boeing. And I heard their 737 MAX have more problems. They said it wouldn't cause anything about the function of the plane. They didn't say what the problem was. But they said you're not going to crash. And but I was pretty upset when I knew early in the year when I had to fly on a 737 MAX. I didn't like it at all. I kept waiting for it to go down. But anyway.
Well, especially when you read that the problem is a fuselage.
Is that what it is? Is that their new problem?
Well, they call it a quality problem. I don't know if it's quality or quality control or both, or lack thereof. But fuselage is, I mean, there are a lot of parts to an airplane interconnected that matter, but boy, if you got a non-functioning fuselage,
you'd think that would be kind of important.
You're not going too far.
But so it was all because of Boeing that the durable good orders missed the expectations today. July durable good orders reported by the Census Bureau came in at 5.2% year over year, a steeper decline than the roughly 4% that was predicted. But excluding transportation, orders were actually up. And, you know, it's always funny. Let's exclude something so we can make it up. And that's true. Make it up. Get my
we
little
call partner. Them the way we see them in this country. And if we don't see them, that's what we do. We make it up.
Make it up. We make it up. So, let's see. Boeing and Airbus recorded a record number of plane orders, 1,100, at the Paris Air Show that was in June, Boeing took in roughly 300 and Airbus 800. So I can't be this break already.
Yeah, we yak too much in this break.
Yeah, we do. We got to knock it off. Anyway, we'll be back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs at Discount Gold and Silver. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And I had an interesting surprise today. I saw that 1 ounce American Silver Eagles, the wholesale price popped up 25 cents. So we're going into, we're not there yet, but we're heading into the end of the year where there's always the changeover and the U.S. Mint always gets tight with their product. I mean, there's no supply issues right now, but they do have a tendency to tighten their allocations to the several dealers that they deal with. And so you might see the premiums get a little bit larger now. So we might have seen the bottom of the wholesale premium. So if you're looking to buy Silver Eagles, give us a call. Don't wait. That's what happens. Usually the price will end up going, the price will start moving up and so will the premium. So you're going to get a double whammy on the uptick. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We got some great prices on some backdated gold eagles, so give us a call on those also. I think this is important to talk about how the BRICS have added 6 more countries to the trade bloc. Everybody was thinking that our dollar would be crashing overnight and so forth and whatnot. It's going to take a little bit longer
than what everyone anticipates. But I think it's important to know that Iran and Saudi Arabia were among six countries sent to join Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa in the BRICS economic bloc for next year. It's a move that foreign policy experts say will likely throw more scrutiny on Beijing's political influence in the Persian Gulf. You have the United Arab Emirates, Argentina, Egypt, and Ethiopia are also set to become new members of BRICS in 2024. And we know what BRICS stands for, and it was set up in 2009 for, you know, refreshing our memories. So it's important. Now, I don't think Ethiopia is going to have a big impact, or Egypt, or even Argentina, but I think the big one there is the United Arab Emirates and Iran. So that's what we have to watch out for. I think those are big deals. And particularly, you know, there goes our agreements with the Saudis. You know, we talked about how they're buying up the world and they're becoming a world player. Thank you, United States. And thank you, taxpayers. And it's kind of interesting. You have BRICS has become one of the leading voices for more representation. And it currently represents about 40% of the world's population and more than a quarter of the world's GDP. Well, 40% of the population, a lot of that is the poor, you know, they're not wealthy nations. Saudi Arabia changes everything. And so that's just kind of interesting, Dave.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is just, conspicuous by his absence, Vladimir Putin. He participated in this summit by a computer, although he did send his foreign minister, Sergey Lavrov, to the end of the conference announcement. He didn't attend the summit in South Africa because the International Criminal Court had issued a warrant for his arrest in March for the abduction of hundreds of children from Ukraine. So that would be an incentive to keep my travel within my own country.
Mm-hmm. Well, this week it's time for your levity is golden. And we're going to have to keep an eye open.
Indeed, we are. It's about you'd call it the New World Order of sorts. And it's not all good, I'm afraid. I mean, for the past year, we're going to call him Kenneth B., has been working as a runner in Uganda for the company WorldCoin. His job is to get as many people as possible, listen to this, to scan their eyeballs into a big metallic orb in exchange for about $60 worth of cryptocurrency. Let that sink in for a second. Now, these runners, who are paid a commission based on how many Ugandans they recruit to sign up, literally station themselves at kiosks and shopping malls, plus universities and on sidewalks in the cities. They try to sell passersby on the idea of trading their biometric data for a new kind of digital identity known as, and here you go, this is our future, ladies and gentlemen, if we don't watch it, World ID. The organizational goal is to make WorldCoin a household name in Uganda for now, but across the world in time. Now, Kenneth B. and his colleagues are selling the idea of being part of a novel world economy where a scan of your iris unlocks access to universal basic income, online banking, and a new form of virtual currency that streamlines the process of paying bills.
Well, if what I read is right, the marketing is apparently effective so far. I mean, WorldCoin says they've more than 2.2 million people have signed up since its soft launch back in late 2021. And that was even during COVID when couldn't do anything.
How about it? That's bizarre. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. And it's only a start. I mean, the organization's ultimate ambition, WorldCoin, is said to be 2 billion people for now. Governments have expressed concerns over the biometric enrollment process and possible violations of national data protection laws. Now, some potential applicants are nervous about the aggressive evangelism associated with the product as well. Narariba Abel, who has worked in the crypto industry for the last decade, says it looked like a scam to me, mainly because of the focus on marketing and signing up new users. They were everywhere. Abel works for the company Yellowcard, which is the largest centralized crypto exchange in Africa, or on Africa. Another Yellowcard employee, Muva Mutama, soon found out about a free sign-up bonus being given to all those who scanned their eyes into the orb. When he examined WorldCoin's white paper, though, he saw they were using proof of personhood in blockchain and thought, all right, cool, sort of makes sense. And then he saw that it was, well, it was controlled by Sam Altman. And Altman is the man behind OpenAI and ChatGPT, a language-based chatbot capable of human-like conversations that sparked widespread interest in generative artificial intelligence when it launched to the public last year. ChatGPT is essentially what presidential candidate Chris Christie called Vivek Ramaswamy last night as a creature of that. Besides, as Mutama dug into the larger mission statement around collecting this biometric info as a way to differentiate people from robots, he thought it all seemed a bit too dystopian. Oh my gosh, do you think? He said, I don't think the majority of people in third world countries know about data privacy.
That's why
I'm
not
sure how many
there.
Of us know about it here in the developed world. Well, WorldCoin, which is valued supposedly at around $3 billion, its overriding goal is to sign up the world's population for this new decentralized form of identity. They're calling it decentralized, I think, to try and make it sound attractive. It's called proof of personhood. It validates identity of every individual on the planet through this biometric capture of the eye, and then connecting that decentralized virtual ID to an address on the blockchain. I mean, can you imagine? Well, I can imagine, based on some of these creative movies that have been out the last couple of years. The company describes World ID as sort of a digital passport that lets you prove you are unique and a real person while remaining supposedly anonymous. According to WorldCoin, this ID could be used to sign into all websites without the user ever having to forfeit identifying information in the process, like your name, email address, phone number, and what have you. Would also theoretically be untraceable by governments or other organizations, which, if true, isn't a bad thing, unless, of course, you're a terrorist. As WorldCoin explains on its website, it doesn't, quote, want to know who you are, just that you are unique, end quote. Yeah, right. And I have a California to Hawaii bridge to sell you. That melody is this week's scary levity is golden.
You know, it really is frightening that they just want to get every person, everybody on this planet. And you know what's interesting, the part where it says where it could sign into all websites without the user, that means they can sign into all your bank accounts and everything else.
Yeah.
All your retirement accounts. Your pensions.
Well, you know, hopefully they'd be password protected through.
Well, you don't think that if they could have access to your emails and so forth, that they wouldn't have the hacking capabilities? It'd probably be a breeze.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm being tongue in cheek.
You're being tongue in cheek about passwords. Passwords freak me out. I get stressed out over passwords.
I know. To think of how many
many
each of us has.
Yeah, they never be able to crack mine. I got so many. But I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't either.
So anyways, that's really a frightening article. Thank you for bringing that to us. And, well, you know, we often talk about the different indicators when it comes to a recession. And the long-awaited recession should be nearly upon us, or, you know, maybe it's already in our midst. And yet there's virtually not a whole lot of evidence that the economy is contracting, putting this indicator's run of correctly predicted recession in peril. And it's called everyone since 1955. So you have diehard listeners know what, you know, you guys know what we're talking about, the inverted yield curve. We talk about it here all the time, which has been in the territory that supposedly signals a looming recession for, it's been there almost a year. The curve inverts when yields on short-term government bonds are higher than those on long-term bonds, which is the opposite of the usual state of affairs. The curve remains inverted but has slowly been inching its way back toward normal as the yield differential between these two securities shrank. Back in May, the three-month Treasury bill was yielding almost 2 percent points more than the 10-year. Now the gap has narrowed to about 1 point. So if you're in the bond world, this is known as a re-steepening of the yield curve. So it gets a little confusing, Dave.
But yeah, you know, what's fascinating about this iconic, in some ways, measure of recession is that for every recession, I think since 1955, it has an inverted yield curve of this sort has successfully predicted every recession. Usually happens within 12 to 18 months of the initial curve and the initial inversion, excuse me. And that's where we are now. So, you know, as we talk about a lot in this program, if you're feeling like the economy isn't doing too much for you and your family, well, that's probably because we're in a recession that hasn't been officially defined as such. It's interesting. Campbell Harvey, who's from Duke, he's a finance professor there, he's given credit for the one who identified the predictive power of the inverted yield curve. Said there is a re-steepening that happens sometimes before and definitely during a recession. Aha, there you go. And he continues, in the last four recessions, re-steepening happened before the recession began, adding that it's possible that recession could still be in the cards this time. He says it's far too early to say if it's a false signal. So that's interesting. I don't know.
You know, it is interesting. In the last four, it's happened before. Yet you don't hear when you hear these financial analysts on mainstream media that they never talk about that. They never talk about what has happened in the past and something that they can gauge by. And I would think that the reason it's happening is because of the amount of debt, the amount of the bailouts and everything, because it distorts everything. I mean,
yeah, certainly.
With back in 1955, you didn't have government doing what they do today.
Mm-hmm.
Until the last four recessions, probably. And if you go back to the last four sessions, you'd be, what, in the middle of 1990, the late 1987. I don't know if they've, you had 87, you had the Asian contagion. I don't think that was really a recession, though. It hit the stock market. 2008 and, you know, the one. So I don't know which four they're talking about, but it'd be interesting to make the comparisons. But anyway.
Yeah, anyway, that's all I have to say.
All right. And again, this is, again, I would think all on credit card debt, where you see spending at restaurants and bars surge. But although, what do you do during depressions? What do you do during recessions? You drink. Bars become very busy. So that's what they're doing now. They're out there eating and drinking. Retail sales at restaurants and bars surged from May through July compared with a year ago. Despite prices remaining relatively elevated for restaurants and bars, sales in the sector jumped 12% in July and 9.5% in June from a year ago. So it doesn't really sound like the economy is cooling, or those banks are just creating more and more credit cards to send out. I hear the music. It's time for a break. We'll be right back. Take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Yes, Melody taking care of other client business this final segment. And you know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Well, let's circle back to how we started today's program, the Fed at a crossroads in Wyoming. Now, as Fed officials and other economic elites gather for the Fed's annual economic symposium in Jackson Hole, the investment world will obviously be listening to how especially Fed Chair Jerome Powell tomorrow morning frames the fight against inflation. The question Powell and other Fed officials face is whether inflation's downward path is convincing enough now to take a more measured pace with hiking, or whether a more aggressive approach is still called for. Last August, Powell sent the markets plunging after vowing in a shorter than typical keynote speech to do what it takes to get inflation back to the Fed's 2% target, warning higher rates could bring pain and higher unemployment. Back then, he said, "We will keep at it until we are confident the job is done." Well, this year, Powell will walk to the podium with the belief that there's a pathway to achieve lower inflation without seeing steep job losses. He's got a resilient economy, a still strong job market, and American consumers who are still spending at a healthy clip, albeit with their credit cards. At the same time, he also faces fresh market turmoil triggered by a surge in long-term Treasury yields to their highest level in over 15 years. Now, traditionally, Fed chairs have used their Jackson Hole speech to deliver a longer-term policy message and vision. Powell's 2018 Guided by the Stars speech, perhaps his most memorable as Fed chair, outlined how he thought about the natural real interest rate, that's the rate that neither spurs nor slows growth. Board Chair Ben Bernanke used his speech in 2010 to present an argument that the Fed could get the economy going by purchasing bonds. Yes, that good old tool now known as QE, or quantitative easing. Well, the tradition of gathering in Jackson Hole began more than four decades ago now, when officials from the Kansas City Fed picked the idyllic spot for their get-together in 1982. That year, the KC folks figured the best way to ensure then-Fed Chair Paul Volcker would accept an invitation was to locate the event somewhere with good fly fishing in late August. Now, it was widely known that Volcker was fond of the sport. Chomping on the good old cigar as he fished. Decades later, central bankers from all around the world, plus academics, other policymakers, and journalists still gather in the same place to talk about the economy and monetary policy. Fun stuff. Events held at Jackson Lake Lodge in Grand Teton National Park. Just beautifully scenic. This year, the organizer's overarching theme is structural shifts in the global economy. Many observers expect Powell to reiterate the Fed's commitment to bringing down inflation. The question is whether he'll hint he's encouraged enough by the most recent data to move into an extended hold, or whether he signals another move yet this year. Last month, Fed officials raised interest rates for the 11th time since March 2022, and what may be the first of two more rate hikes that officials have penciled in for the remainder of the year? Inflation has cooled on a headline basis from a peak of over 9% last June to just over 3% last month, still a chunk above its goal of 2%. In his last comments after the Fed policy meeting in July, Powell wasn't yet sufficiently convinced about inflation to let off the gas pedal and said he needed to see leftover distortions from the pandemic on supply and demand ease further. He said July 26, policy has not been restrictive for long enough to have its full desired effects. So we intend to keep policy restrictive until we're confident that inflation is coming down sustainably to our target, and we're prepared to further tighten if that is appropriate. Now, in a separate story, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal reminds us in his blog today that 3 years ago at the Fed's Jackson Hole event, it spelled out a new framework called flexible average inflation targeting. Fight, if you will. The idea was that the Fed would tolerate some indefinite period of above-target inflation to allow for a rapid labor market recovery. Basically, it identified this trade-off, that is, tolerating higher inflation in exchange for a more rapid pace of growth and labor market healing than we saw in the 2010s. Wiesenthal further reminds us that over the next few years after that framework was announced, everything ran way hotter than anyone was anticipating, with inflation far overshooting what anyone was imagining in August 2020. Since then, he notes, there's been a lot of hang-wringing about what policy choices caused this surge and what might have been done differently in some ideal scenario. Maybe the Fed should have raised rates sooner. Maybe it should have halted asset purchase sooner. Maybe they shouldn't have even seen it as transitory. Maybe Biden shouldn't have sent out all those checks. Maybe there was too much money sent to state and local governments, and maybe the duration of the student loan pause was unjustified. Maybe the other investment bills, infrastructure, inflation reduction, CHIPS, are adding too much demand in an already guarded economy. I mean, people can and will go on about these and other questions, and probably they'll be debating them, at least in academic circles, for years to come. Actually, more likely decades. But that's a subject for their future books. But for all the talk about policy errors, it's also worth going back to that original trade-off contemplated by the Fed. Above target inflation was seen as a worthwhile price to pay for a rapid labor market recovery. And we did get that rapid labor market recovery in spades. The last few years have brought an incredibly tight labor market, the underreported headline unemployment rate continuing near multi-decade lows. Other measures of the labor market remain robust as well. Wage growth, particularly at the lower end of the pay scales, has been amazingly robust. Now, the spread between white and black unemployment has compressed impressively, and prime age employment to population ratio is very high among that 25 to 54 group. And so Wiesenthal suggests it's worth remembering that all of those things people complain about, stimulus checks, the state and local government aid that's gone a lot unspent, the Fed's persistent in raising rates, all likely contributed to the robust pace of economic activity. Beyond that, he believes you can't assume that we would have had this strong labor market with some other set of policies. Remember last time around last year, lots of people thought a recession was not only inevitable but imminent. Instead, the economy has shown almost shocking resilience in the face of a rapid pace of interest rate hikes. Look, yeah, segments of the economy are and have been in recession mode for well over a year, some more. But inflation has obviously cooled down overall since peaking last summer. There are concerns it could pick back up again, particularly with persistent labor market tightness and with nominal wage growth that's pretty significantly above historical trends. So Wiesenthal says the question is still then about trade-offs. How much of a price is the Fed willing to pay now in terms of higher unemployment in order to get inflation all the way back 2% and keep it there? Is there some wiggle room on the inflation front? Can the Fed let it hover higher than 2%? Would it ever formally say that above 2% inflation is tolerable? Thus, he concludes, seem like the big questions in the months, perhaps even the days ahead, are these. In another related story, these questions are prompting a new debate about whether the Fed's 2% target is even worth holding on to or if it should be modified to reflect new realities. Nobel economist Paul Krugman thinks the Fed should bump up its target to 3%, but fellow econ guru Mohammed El Aryan says there's no chance of that happening. Now, the two economists' comments come ahead of the Fed chair's speech tomorrow morning in Jackson Hole. Krugman says, quote, "I agree with Jason Furman's call for a 3% inflation target. The rationale for 2% has been overtaken by a couple decades' experience, and many of us have been saying this for a while. Now, we know the Fed's been raising rates at the fastest pace since the 80s, from near zero to an upper range of 5.5%. The aggressive tightening cycles managed to slow down the annual pace of consumer price increases. But investors are prepared for further rate increases this year as the Fed stays adamant on meeting its target. Unlike others, Krugman has been bullish about the economy in recent months. He's dismissed recession fears altogether and believes China's economic crisis won't spill over to the U.S. Says he doesn't. Not even sure that rising debt even matters. More on that in a forthcoming blog or newsletter article. But he did say, "I'm puzzled by the assertion that there's a lot of work still to do." and that the hardest part may still lie ahead. I guess he's referring to Powell. Since most measures of underlying inflation are currently sitting around 3%. So if you think 3% is the right target, shouldn't we be declaring victory? Or to put it another way, if 2% was a mistake, how many people should lose their jobs for a mistake? Well, Arian, on the other hand, is warning there's no chance the Fed will recalibrate, even though it is a strong argument by some. He said earlier this week, it's very hard for a central bank to change an inflation target when it's been missing it so consistently. Well said. So, yes, there is a theoretical argument for a higher target. But don't look for Chair Powell to touch that issue in any significant way tomorrow. And finally today, a simple argument that Joe Wiesenthal says in another blog earlier this week, says we could make, is that Fed tightening hasn't had much of a dampening effect on the economic activity anyway. Why? Because there's a lot of fixed mortgage rate debt out there, and so that limits the pass-through effect of higher rates. Here's something significant. Yesterday, Bob Burgess of Bloomberg posted a revealingly cool chart showing that the effective rate of interest on mortgage debt in the U.S. right now is still just 3.6%. Yes, it's barely moved at all. It's not even back to where it was before the pandemic, despite the fact that actual mortgage rates now are at their highest level in over two decades. In theory, there's a lot more room for this to rise. In addition, eventually debt gets rolled over or it gets reset. Old mortgages get paid off, new ones take their place. And so, Wiesenthal says, if you wanted to make an argument that monetary policy works with lags and that we haven't really felt the impact of the tightening yet, well, then you could point to this. Of course, the U.S. is fairly unique in terms of how typical a 30-year fixed mortgage is in many places around the world. In fully developed countries, particularly like the UK, houses are bought with floating rate debt and much shorter range, with the impact of higher rates felt quickly and directly on homeowners. And in fact, what's theoretically true may be true in practice as well. Jim McIntyre, Bloomberg Economics, posted another chart, this one of Australia, showing how much retail sales have rolled over in the last year amid the jump in rates. As he wrote in a note last week, the Reserve Bank of Australia may be forced to start cutting rates ahead of other central banks. In other words, while the U.S. may be still waiting for the effect of monetary policy to dampen activity domestically, elsewhere around the world, hikes are not only already slowing down household consumption in a notable way, the impact may soon get to the point where rate cuts are in order. And that will have a very interesting effect on the Fed if the shoe's on the other foot. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, once again proving that in our ever-changing world, the more things change, the more they remain the same. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me